The Magic of Bliss Masterclass, Module 7. Shankaracharya shares a beautiful story to illustrate the idea of jiva and how one can overcome moha. In ancient India, there was a king who had an astonishing 1 million wives. Despite this, he was unable to have a child. One day, the sage Narada visited the kingdom. So the king warmly welcomed him and took great care of him. Impressed by the king's sincerity and service, Narada noticed that the king was excessively affectionate towards him. So he suspected that there must be some reason behind this behavior. Curious, Narada asked the king about his problem. The king revealed that he had no children despite having 1 million wives. Narada advised the king that the ultimate goal of life is to attain moksha, liberation, and develop love for God. He encouraged the king not to waste his time grieving over worldly matters. However, the king stubbornly believed that life was meaningless without children. So in response, Narada said, "All right then, I bless you with a son. Make arrangements for the homa, which is a fire ritual. But remember, the child will bring both immense happiness and sorrow." Now the king was lost in his own worlds, so he heard only the first part of the sage's statement that he would have a son. He completely ignored the warning about the sorrow the child would bring. The ritual was performed, and after a few months, the king's first queen gave birth to a child. Overjoyed, the king's happiness knew no bounds. He spent his days and night playing, laughing, embracing his child. Years passed, the child grew into a teenager. However, as time went on, the other queens became jealous because the king neglected them. They conspired to kill the child and hired men to take him to the jungle and end his life. So the assassins carried out their plan, intending to inform the king that the child had died in a tiger attack. When the king reached the news, he was devastated. He refused to leave the side of his beloved son's lifeless body. The word of tragedy reached Narada, and he immediately arrived on the scene. The wise Narada comforted the king and inquired, "For whom are you mourning, O king? Can you share with me?" Clutching onto the lifeless body, the king responded, "I am grieving for my soul son, O sage." "What was your son like?" questioned the sage. "What do you mean, O sage?" the king asked, puzzled. "This is my son. This is his physical form. This is how he appeared," the king explained, pointing to the body. Narada asked, "If that is your son, why are you weeping? He is still with you. You are holding him." The king replied, "No. He has left me. I want my son who used to speak, laugh, and enjoy." "That is why, O king, I asked you how your son looked like to you," Narada explained. "You interacted with the body of your son throughout your life, O king, never with the real person," Narada continued. "The body you interacted with is still with you. You are holding it. The real person is gone," Narada emphasized. "You never interacted with the real person that dwells in your son," Narada concluded. "You cannot know the true appearance of a person before their birth or after their death. So why mourn for someone you never laid eyes on or had any interaction with? The individual you witness is merely a physical form that still remains. Carry out the final rituals for the body, O king, and continue with your life. Your son never truly existed as a physical entity. O sage, I humbly request that you restore his prana, the life force, back to his body." "The person who interacted with you," sage Narada replied, "the person who interacted with you, laughed and shared joyful moments, was not the prana, the life force, O king. During deep sleep every night when your son was alive, he possessed the life force prana which you're talking about, but he was unable to recognize his true self and did not acknowledge you as his father. Therefore, O king, the one who spoke, laughed, and enjoyed was not solely the prana, the life force. It was the eternal soul, the Atman, that temporarily resided in the physical form as the individual self, the jiva. This divine essence, O king, has no beginning and no end. So stop mourning for your son, as he is not the physical body you are embracing or the life force. He is eternal with no beginning or no end." "O wise one," as said the king, "your words resonate with me, but I am still filled with sorrow. I yearn to have my son back, no matter the price, in this very body." "Very well, I shall take action," said the sage. The king felt a surge of joy, believing that his son would be restored to life, The sage explained, I cannot bring him back to life in this physical form, but I will summon his jiva and you'll be able to communicate with him. Narada, the wise sage, summoned his son's jiva. The jiva appeared before him. The king spoke, I am your father, my son. I wish to speak with you and have you return to this body. The jiva laughed and questioned, which father from which lifetime are you referring to, O king? I have had countless fathers with no recollection or tally. I do not recognize you as my father. The father began to weep. The jiva remarked, why shed tears, O king? Allow me to share a tale. Once upon a time, there was a father who gave his child $10 as a pocket money. Holding the money, the child happily went to the nearby store to purchase chocolates. So the shop owner exchanged the chocolates for the $10 bill. The shop owner then visited a bookstore, nearby bookstore, and used the $10 to buy a desired book. So now the $10, which was with the child and which passed on to him, now passed on to the bookshop owner. This owner, bookshop owner, accompanied by his girlfriend, went to a coffee shop and ordered 2 cups of coffee. The $10 transferred to the coffee shop owner. The coffee shop owner, burdened by life's trouble, took the $10 and went to a bar for drink. The $10 ended up now in the hands of the bar owner. The bar owner's wife was in the hospital, used the $10 to purchase medicine for her. The $10 now had reached the hospital owner. This owner, known for being miserly and leading a troubled life, took the $10 and sought pleasure with the cheapest prostitute available. The $10 now found its way to the prostitute. Tired of her life, the prostitute yearned for eternal peace. She attended a discourse on God every night near her residence. During one such discourse, the teacher posed a question to the attendees. What is that aspect within you that resembles a female form, constantly changing its appearance and moods every 4 seconds? A devotee answered, the intellect. The teacher affirmed the response, explaining that the intellect is akin to a prostitute. Every 4 seconds, a thought arises before you and the intellect reveals it. No one knows what thought will emerge next. This thought morphs from good to bad, from love to hatred. The intellect, like a prostitute, has no choice but to expose these thoughts, dancing to the tune of pain and pleasure. The teacher then posed another question. Who is the husband of this prostitute who never abandons her and continues to embrace her every 4 seconds? The devotee replied, the jiva. The teacher confirmed this answer, stating that the jiva is the husband and the intellect is the prostitute. For countless years, the jiva and the intellect have deceived you, assuming the roles of the fallen husband and the fallen woman, taking you for a ride. To discover the truth, one must always ask the question, what remains? What remains is known as a substratum, the foundation. The substratum of thoughts is the intellect. The substratum of the intellect is avarana, the covering of maya. The substratum of avarana is the jiva. And one becomes conscious of this when one enters deep sleep. And the substratum of the jiva is maya, prakriti in its equilibrium state of bliss, which is nothing but sattvic in sattvic, blue in blue, rajas in rajas, red in red, tamas in tamas. The substratum of maya is Ishvara, the voice without form, the voice of God. And the substratum of Ishvara is Brahman. See? So Brahman and Ishvara are one and the same. Ishvara is the voice without form. When someone lacks knowledge of the underlying substratum or foundation, their existence becomes meaningless as the individual jiva and the intellect engage in a futile cycle resembling that of a fallen man and woman. The initial foundation, the first foundation of thoughts is the intellect. And foolishly, we remain fixated on it. So the substratum of the thought is the intellect and that's all. We never move. We never ask what is the substratum of the intellect. What is the substratum of the intellect is avarana. See, the intellect derives its illumination from the wheel avarana, which in turn finds its foundation in the individual self. And the individual self, known as the jiva, never endeavors to understand its true foundation in Ishvara and Brahman. Instead, it aimlessly wanders through life after life. Though you may believe you have achieved much, your life will only find purpose when you listen to the voice of God. Your substratum should be Ishvara. Your substratum should be Ishvara, who will guide you to Brahman. You must surrender your mind to him. As Bhagavan Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, whoso offers me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I accept that which is offered by my devotee with single-minded devotion. The prostitute heard these words and took the $10 note, purchased flowers to offer at the feet of God. The $10 note returned back to God. The jiva spoke, O king, do not grieve for the demise of your son. In this story, the $10 note represents the jiva. In a single day, it passes through many hands. When the child held the $10 note, the qualities of the child were transferred to the note. When the note read the chocolate shop owner, the jiva forgot its relationship with the child and only remembered the knowledge possessed by the store owner. When it reached the coffee shop owner, it forgot the relationship with the child and the chocolate owner, and the qualities of delusion struck with the jiva. And so the jiva traveled from fun to money to relationships to bad habits and finally at the feet of God. Just like this, O King, I the jiva, have traveled through 311 billion thousand years in just one life cycle of the universe. Like the note, I have had millions and millions of fathers. Which one will I consider my father? I am the jiva, never born, never died. When I was born as a child to you, I left my previous body where I died as a child. My father from that life is also grieving. Whom will I please? So, O King, do not grieve. Free your intellect from your thoughts, then free the jiva from the intellect and cut off the fake bonds of delusions and the never-ending pain and pleasure. Your foundation is Ishvara. That is your substratum who will lead you to Brahman. Offer your mind to your substratum. You are the substratum. You are the remaining. You are Brahman. All roads lead to Bhagavan. The jiva left the scene. The king woke up from his madness of holding on to the child's dead body, and with a blazing fire of discernment and renunciation, he rose and promised to offer his mind at the feet of Bhagavan. What is Bhagavan? According to Shankaracharya, the term Bhagavan refers to someone who possesses bhag, B-A-G. In Sanskrit, B-A-G, bhag, represents the six powers that God bestows upon a newborn child. First is called Aishwarya, which means abundance. Even though the child just entered the world and hasn't performed any actions in this life, people eagerly await their arrival, right, when the child comes, taking care of them from the moment they are born. How is that even possible? If you haven't done any good deeds, then how can you expect someone to reward you by taking care of you? This abundance is proof that God is protecting and blessing the child with abundance right from the first few seconds of the existence. Visualizing this can attract God's grace and fill any lack of abundance in you. Next, second, dharma. The newborn instinctively knows to suckle its mother's breast for nourishment. This innate knowledge of how to take care of the body is dharma. God imparts this understanding of dharma within the first few seconds, even when the child has no prior knowledge in this lifetime. Dharma is inherent within you. The purpose of the human body is to understand your Atman's dharma. It is a divine gift that requires no external search. Your task is to remove the ignorance that obstructs the manifestation of this dharma. Third, yash. It's called fame. As soon as a child is born, phones start ringing, messages are sent, and the word spreads, leading to celebrations and distribution of sweets in many places. How is this possible? The child hasn't done anything or performed any actions, yet they become famous. This fame is a gift from God, and you're already famous before you are born because of Bhagavan. Fourth, shobha. It's called good luck. In Asia, when a child is born, some mothers put a black mark on the child's face to ward off evil eyes. This act symbolizes God's protection against evil and brings good luck to the child. Bhagavan bestows good luck upon the child right from the beginning. If you feel lacking in good luck, fame, or abundance in your life, know that you are possessed of them even before you were born because of Bhagavan. These qualities, listen carefully, are not determined by the world. These are gifts already bestowed upon you by Bhagavan. By visualizing correctly and revisiting the past, you can change false notion of lacking good luck, fame, and abundance. The fifth and the sixth is called Jnana and Vairagya. Jnana represents right knowledge and Vairagya signifies renunciation. When a child is young, it finds happiness in playing with toys. So why is the child content with toys? Because it possesses the knowledge, the Jnana, that if it demands gold and money, you know, if you put a gold money, others may take it away. It knows that. That's why it's happy with the toys. Thus, the child is satisfied with toys and thus displays renunciation. So it says no to gold and money and other stuff which it knows it cannot keep as a child. And it says yes to toys because it can play with it. So it already has the Jnana and Vairagya. Bhagavan imparts Jnana and Vairagya at the time of birth, even when the child hasn't performed any actions. So Bhagavan is the one who gives these six qualities even when you're not performed any action. Abundance, fame, good luck, knowledge, discrimination, which is renunciation and dharma. See, these six qualities. You don't need any object or person or friend to grant you these powers. These are in fact not qualities, these are powers. Bhagavan is the magical word that bestows all these qualities upon you at the time of your birth. It is due to false visualization that you may feel lacking in these qualities, causing sorrow. This lack of understanding is called avidya. Visualize the feet of God and all these qualities will be added to you. Shankaracharya provides a simple example. A couple worked their entire life and saved, you know, $100,000. They invested their money in mutual fund scheme that promised to multiply their income, allowing them to live peacefully for the rest of their life. However, when it was time to receive the first interest payment, after a year, they discovered that the mutual fund company had vanished. They arrived at the location only to discover an empty space, devoid of any office computers or people. It had been sold. This unfortunate turn of events resulted in them losing all their hard-earned money and dashed their hopes of earning interest to secure a peaceful life for the remainder of their days. Shankaracharya states that the same happens to humans. If you spend all your time and energy in the world, when it comes to reaping the rewards, you will receive nothing. When the jiva, individual soul, leaves the body, only dharma accompanies it to the other realms if liberation is not attained. All the material possessions accumulated through karma have no value in the other worlds. They may only benefit you in this world. Dharma and Bhagavan are the eternal substratum that remains with you always. The ultimate question should always be, what is remaining? Not, who am I, or any other question. When you ask the question, what is remaining? The answer will be, I am the remaining. The voice that asked the question and the voice that answered are one and the same. Brahman, I am Brahman. There is no difference between the question and the answer. When this happens, you have reached the goal. The goal is the final conclusion of Upanishads called Mahavakyas. There are four Mahavakyas, which means final words. They all have mean the same, that Jiva and Brahman is the same. One of them is called Tat Tvam Asi. Tat meaning Brahman, Tvam meaning Jiva, and Asi means same, that Jiva and Brahman is the same. That's the final conclusion. When the voice that asked the question and the voice that answered is the same, antakarana, your inner organ, the chidabhasa, the reflected light, and vritti, deception, the voice of God is heard. This is called mokshakal, the hour of moksha, liberation. It is a combination of direct knowledge and visualization. Now, don't confuse it with an experience and say, oh, you know, my thoughts are still there and I don't feel anything different. It is not about what you feel or think or experience. There is nothing else other than Brahman. That is the final conclusion. All this is a visualization. So the direct knowledge is removing the false visualization and replacing it with the right visualization. If you still have doubts and feel something else is remaining other than Brahman, then realize it is nothing but your false visualization and reread and re-listen. Say to yourself, I am Dharma, I am the substratum, I am the remaining, Ishwara dwells in my heart, I am the self resident in the inner self of all beings, says Krishna to Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita. I want to leave you with these beautiful words from Shankaracharya of Jyotirmath. Charcoal is called koila in Hindi, koila. Charcoal is made from wood that has been heated in the absence of oxygen. This process drives off the water and other volatile compounds, leaving a lightweight porous material with high carbon content. Shankaracharya says we are like charcoal with high carbon content. Just like charcoal holds on to the carbon content and maintains its form and nature, we hold on to our three gunas, sattvic, rajas and tamas, despite listening to the highest teachings. We become knowers of Atman, but never the Atman itself. This should be corrected. Charcoal has to be burnt in fire. The moment charcoal touches fire, the carbon content is released and it becomes ash. The fire is the Atman, the source light. Visualize as the embodied jiva with the three gunas touches the Atman. First, the black color of the charcoal disappears. That black color is the tamas in you being released. Next, the charcoal becomes red. That is the rajas in you. As the charcoal burns, the rajas representing the red color is released and transforms itself into white. That is sattvic. As it continues to burn in contact with fire, the sattvic is also released and only fire remains. I am the fire that has consumed its own fuel. Carbon is the fuel and fire consumes it. I am the fire that has consumed its own fuel. I am the Atman that has consumed its three gunas. When we are born, the charcoal that exists as ash, as unmanifest gunas, in us becomes a spark and then becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and takes the form of visualization, thoughts, feelings and objects in the world. That is Maya. The substratum of Maya is Brahman. You are that substratum. Congratulations, you are no longer the charcoal, the koila. You are the fire that has consumed its own fuel. You are no longer a knower of Atman, Jnani. You are the Atman itself. You are no longer a Jnani. You are a Tattva Jnani. You have attained the highest realization on earth. Where the yogin Krishna is, there the bowman Arjuna is, there dwells glory, victory, prosperity, and stable order, says the great Bhagavan Krishna to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you and God bless.